the degree factories must be firing on all cylinders, because getting an A grade at New Zealand universities become easier. A new report shows that since 2006, the number of A grades given out has risen from a quarter of all marks to more than a third, 35%, and pass rates are now over 90%. You might think this is a cause for celebration, but apparently not. The author of this report says it's making it harder for employers to identify genuinely smart graduates, and it's undervaluing real high achievers. Interested to hear from you if you yourself are an employer. Are you noticing this, that people are coming to you with spotless academic records, but you're finding that you're having to teach them a lot of basics? 2101's the text number. Dr. James Kerstead is a former university academic, a classics man, in fact, now a researcher with the New Zealand Initiative, and he joins me now from our studio in Wellington. Kia ora to you. Thanks for coming in.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
How did you go in university?
How did I go? Well, yeah. Actually, you know, I did fairly well, but I was at Oxford as an undergraduate, and they have a very deflationary grading environment.
They do.
So I actually came out with what's known as a 2-1 rather than a first.
Although, so, I mean, even at Oxford, I've seen this, that back in the day, a minuscule proportion of degrees were handed out that were first-class honours, 1-1s, whereas now I think it's something like 20, 25%.
Yeah, it's getting much higher. It's there's grade inflation at Oxford. It's less than at other UK universities, but yeah, there is grade inflation. It's also less than at Yale and Harvard. At Yale and Harvard, I think 80% of the grades are A's now.
Is that right? 80% of grades? Far out. All right. Well, I mean, lay it out for me, James. What's the thesis statement here? What's going on to your mind?
Well, you know, as you said, so we found that the proportion of A grades has risen by 13 percentage points, so from 22 to 35% between around 2006 and 2024. There was this huge spike during COVID, with 49% of all grades at the University of Auckland in 2020 being in the A range, so A plus, A or A minus. And also, as you noted, the pass rates are way up. So at most New Zealand universities, they're now above 90%. And at two, so Lincoln and Massey, they're above 95%. And the reason this is concerning is that we really have no reason to believe that this is reflected by, or that this is a result of improvements in student performance.
Why not? Why are we just dismissing the idea that maybe the kids are just smarter?
We're definitely not dismissing it. We've tried to look into it carefully, and this is what studies of grade inflation do across the world. They try and look at factors which may have led to improved student performance. Mm. So we looked at the idea that students are better out of high school. That doesn't seem to be the case. If you look at the international benchmarks like PISA, the scores are going down. We looked at the idea that there are more female students, and female students tend to get better grades. But actually, the proportion of female students hasn't increased in the last 10 or 20 years, which is when we observe these massive grade rises. We looked at the idea that there was more funding, but there's actually not more funding per students in the past few years, and we have this huge increase in A grades during COVID. And finally, we looked at the idea that there were more staff per student, so able to give more support, both on the academic level and maybe on the sort of non-academic level, learning support, that kind of thing. And that figure as well is pretty flat over the past 10 years. And again, you know, we see this gradual growth, and then we see this huge surge during COVID. And then even after COVID, the grades go down again, but then they rebound. So none of that seems to be explained by the rates of, student performance in high school, female students, more funding, or more staff per student. It could be something else. So we'd actually welcome other scholars, trying to tell us that there's another factor in testing that and showing that that might actually be influential here. But, these are kind of standard things that studies of grade inflation look at all across the world.
Well, I'm no scholar, so take this with a pinch of salt. But I do wonder about, I'm sure that you did take this into account in some way, but I do wonder about the influence of technology and technological developments. And I mean, taking the example perhaps of like law, in which maybe 20 years ago you would have had to have a more encyclopedic knowledge of case law and specific law cases and so on and so forth. Databases, reservoirs of repositories of knowledge like this have rendered, you know, having to memorize specific cases maybe less beneficial than it did 20 years ago. And so according to those standards, perhaps students these days are using their energies in a different way. And it seems as though the influence of technological developments would be difficult to quantify.
Yeah, it would be difficult. I mean, I would expect some of that would be reflected in things like spending, you know, because maybe you're buying more computers, you're investing in more IT staff. Not all of it, because, of course, people have their own devices, but that is pretty hard to quantify.
Yeah.
I mean, ideally, what we'd be able to do is test student sort of cognitive performance directly.
Mm.
That would be a project in itself. But yeah, I mean, looking across the world, they do these studies of grade inflation. They try and find out a reason why the students might be better. And it seems very difficult to actually show that students are materially better. And certainly and so, anecdotally, I mean, this is not direct evidence, but my sense is from being a former academic of Vic and still talking to academics nowadays, is that students are actually getting worse. I mean, if you talk to scientists, they say that students' basic numeracy is getting worse when they come to university. Mm. First year's numeracy is not very good. I had that experience teaching classics that their literacy wasn't very good. They weren't really able to write essays. Some of them weren't even able to write a sentence. And that worsened over time, and it got especially bad during COVID. So I think there's other things going on here than just the students getting better. And also, we know during COVID that we were told by the administrators at university to be especially accommodating of students. At some universities like Auckland, they actually raised the students. The administrators told everybody to raise the students by a single grade, by 5%. So we know there are other things going on. We don't have clear evidence that the students are getting smarter. We have a lot of anecdotal suggestions that the students are actually getting worse.
And so the inference there is what? That this is an institutional thing, that the universities are taking it easier?
There is a sort of ethic of kindness, I think, which is part of the problem. But I think the main problem by far is the incentives that academics face to give out more A's to attract more students, because the largest component in student funding is student numbers. Mm. So I knew this when I was a classics professor or lecturer, that if my student numbers dropped in my courses, you know, that could be very dangerous for me and my colleagues, because the university might cut one of us. And I think a lot of people at the university kind of know this. And so they kind of err on the safe side, and they grade quite generously, and they have a sort of sense of what grades people are getting in other programs and what their colleagues are doing. And they don't want to be, you know, they don't want to be the department that gets a reputation for harsh grading, because then the students are going to stay away. So I think that's the main thing. It's not really that academics aren't taking their work seriously or anything like that. They are taking their work seriously. It's just that the incentives, the system that they're operating in, is pushing them to give out easier and easier grades.
And, well, I mean, what is the downstream effect of that?
Well, I mean, the downstream effect of that is that you get what we've observed in the report, a lot of A's and very high pass rates.
But, I mean, and downstream of that, what is the...
Oh, I see. So,
yeah,
I mean,
what's the effect of quite... Well, it's not quite unquote, but, you know, paraphrasing, too many A's.
No, the problem is that if you worked really hard and you're really bright, you come out of university with A's that should mean something, right? You want to use your honors degree if you got to that level, or master's or whatever. If you performed well at university, you want to be able to take that into employers and say, look, I worked hard, I'm really good. And for the employers to know that that's a strong, reliable signal of good performance. Whereas with grade inflation, what happens, it's kind of like monetary inflation, right? You take your $5 to the cafe, you used to be able to get a flat white, now you can't. So it's like you take your A's to the employer, those A's used to be able to get you a good job, now they don't, because the employer says, well, look, everybody else got, you know, not everybody else, that's an exaggeration, but a lot of other people have A's on their CV too. A lot of other people have honors degrees, master's degrees. And so, you know, for the people who are working really hard, it does a disservice to them. It also doesn't motivate the students who are maybe, you know, not so inclined to hit the books. Traditionally, they would have been thinking, whoa, I really need to, like, dial in this course and stop snowboarding so much, because I might actually fail. And I think nowadays they're more likely to think, you know, if you were at Auckland in 2020, you're probably going to think, I don't know if people knew this, but maybe there was a sense that a lot of people were getting A's. You probably were thinking, oh, I hear lots of people are getting A's. You know, whatever I do, I think I'm going to do okay. So I might as well just sort of not work very hard. And, you know, the result is that we have less well-prepared students going onto the job market. And ultimately, that's not great for everybody.
Do you have a doctor that you see regularly, like a GP or something?
Yep.
Do you know what marks they got at university?
Nope.
Do you care?
Yes.
Well, why don't you ask?
Well, I mean, I know that they got into medical school, right?
Yeah.
And I know, and I have a sense that in the old days it was hard to get into medical school.
Well, you don't know that, though.
I don't know that for sure, but I think that this is the case. I mean, I've read enough studies of grade inflation to know that it was hard in the old days to get into medical school. Mm. And I trust that process, right? I trust that these people have been put through their paces.
So it's trust. That's what it is, right? I didn't mean to be facetious there. I guess the point that I was making is... if marks have, there's no point in hyper-focusing on marks if marks have no meaningful relationship to how that person ends up applying the knowledge that they acquire, right? Like, you have to trust in the institutions and the degree. And so it seems as though what you're saying is that it's the institutions that that you've kind of you've lost trust in the unspoken power that a degree carries with it.
Yeah, I mean, you've lost that trust because, I mean, it's not the case that people are kind of deliberately lying, but there's a the grades don't really reflect real student performance, and that's why increasingly I think people are starting to distrust universities, and that's a bad thing. As I say, like, people should be able to come out having earned an honors degree and have that actually get them somewhere in life, or at least initially, right? Get them onto the first rung of the job market. But yeah, I mean, the reason I trust my doctor, as I say, I assume that he got good grades and that led him to get to grad school and to medical school. And he got good grades, I trust, because I trust that those grades reflected good performance, right? So if the grades no longer reflect high performance, I think that's a problem. Okay, maybe it's not the biggest problem in the world, but I think it's a real problem, not only in medicine, of course, in engineering and things like that, it's more serious. But even in other subjects, I think that, well, as a classics professor, I'd like to think that people who get A's in classics actually know what they're talking about and know a bit of history, because that's ultimately what we're trying to do at university. Like, we're meant to believe in the value of our subjects and actually acquiring those subjects to a high standard rather than just, you know, not spending much time studying and coming out with good grades anyway.
The point that you make about, maybe less gifted students who nonetheless can feel a sense of confidence that they're going to do all right, I thought that was quite interesting. And I saw Doug Aleph from the University of Auckland put it quite pithily, saying, if failure is impossible, success becomes meaningless. And perhaps that's the real issue. It's hard to tell who's genuinely competent anymore, although, I mean, what is competence? Is competence dictated? Is a professional's competence dictated by how well they did in exams when they were 22?
Possibly. It depends on their profession. You want the doctor to know a lot about anatomy and symptomatology. And I don't even know what these words mean, but you want the doctor to understand these things very thoroughly. Mm. You know, and it's similar for other fields of life. I mean, you want the pharmacist to understand drugs very thoroughly. You want the engineer to know a lot about the math that's relevant to engineering. So all of that is content. And it's very important that they know that content well.
But again, going back to the example of doctors, which I understand is not, you know, that is a different kind of example. But there are many pathways to becoming a doctor. It is not necessarily just you do well in first year health science and then you can become a doctor. You can acquire a medical degree through postgraduate study if you don't make it in first year uni. You can, if you don't get into postgrad, go to a different country and qualify as a doctor there and then come back to New Zealand. Different people hit their intellectual peaks at different times. And sometimes, you know, everybody takes a different path up the mountain.
Okay, would you like to go to a doctor whose path up the mountain has not included, you know, thoroughly memorizing details of human anatomy and pharmacology?
No, but that's not what we're talking about. You're talking about grades,
okay,
right?
I'll
tell you this, that I don't really care if my doctor got into medical school through health science in first year or did it because they went to Australia after graduating with a science degree and studying that way.
So why don't you? So those paths are equivalent to you, but why? And I would suggest the reason that they're equivalent to you is because both of them feature some kind of reasonably hardcore learning, right? And you want that learning to be high quality. Otherwise, you're probably not going to go visit that doctor.
Mm. Is there any evidence that things like medical malpractice or legal malpractice or accounting malpractice or engineering malpractice or the quality of work in these areas is going down, or that malpractice is going up, which could be connected to a more lenient marking at university level?
I'm not sure if we're talking about malpractice per se.
No, you're not. Yeah, sorry, I'm using that word wrong. But do you know what I mean? Like, is there any evidence that in these areas, the quality of work that is being produced is worse?
I mean, in a sense, it must be, right? If you know less about the human heart and you become a cardiologist, you're going to be a worse cardiologist.
But, we can't just say it must be, though. Like, we have to base this on evidence, right?
What do you think is wrong with my reasoning there?
Well, because you're saying you're making an inference, but there's no evidence for it.
Okay, so I don't understand why this inference is unacceptable to you.
Because I'm asking whether there's evidence that more lenient marking leading to more high grades is having a real world impact.
Almost certainly. I mean, I haven't looked at that evidence, but I'm almost certain that there is. I mean, when people make mistakes, sometimes it's human error, sometimes it's psychology, sometimes it's tiredness. Sometimes it's because they didn't know what they were doing to a high enough level. I mean, we do have cases, for example, of people who are pretending to be doctors, and obviously, you know, grade inflation isn't at that level. But to some extent, you know, it's a sort of tiny, it is the same phenomenon to a tiny degree, right? So, you know, you go in as a doctor and you, it's not that you know nothing, but you know like 80% of what doctors used to know 10 years ago. I would argue that's a problem.
I guess maybe one of the reasons that lecturers and perhaps institutions might be a bit more lenient now, whether consciously or subconsciously, might be the enormous financial investment in a degree. And, you know, if you imagine a middling student sees get degrees, as they say, if they're paying 30 grand to be there and to get the degree, maybe there is a sense of obligation on behalf of the institution to do anything that they can to get them over the line with a good qualification.
Yes, so over the line is the key phrase here. So I think the university does have an obligation to try and help students reach a certain standard in many subjects. I don't think it has an obligation to lower that standard, and I think it's bad if it does lower that standard as a way of meeting that obligation.
I've just got a text in from John in Dunedin. Good training, and again, this is using the example of a doctor, this is much wider than that, of course. John says, good training and application make a good doctor. They need pretty good grades on entry, but not necessarily the best marks. It's time to ditch this sole focus on marks, says John in Dunedin. And you would acknowledge that a person isn't necessarily just their marks, especially not in an area that requires soft skills and emotional intelligence, like being a medical doctor.
Yes, and I would also say that to be a medical doctor, you need to know stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You need to know stuff to a high level. You would acknowledge that, right?
Of course, yeah. No, by all means.
So how do you find that out?
Yes, by assessing students, I suppose, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's interesting. There are papers which are known for an easy A. Brad is actually texting in about this as well. At a lot of universities, for example, first-year te reo Māori classes are known for easy A's, and this gets people in the door. But is there not an argument that maybe more people engaging with te reo Māori, some of them international students, because they know that they're going to get a pretty good mark, is a good thing?
I think that people learning te reo Māori is a good thing. I think it's very interesting, and it's good that the language is being revitalized. But I think that if you really respect te reo Māori, you want people to actually learn it, and you want the people getting A's in te reo Māori to have a really good knowledge of it, right?
Mm.
It's the same as any other subject. And so in some ways it does a disservice to te reo Māori to be putting out lots of students with A's and te reo Māori who can't actually speak it, because then the employers, you know, again, we have the same problems.
Yeah, that's a fair point. What do we do about this then? Is it just a sort of, you know, lecturers, student, universities sort of keep this in mind, or does it say something deeper, do you feel, about the education system, the education industry, in inverted commas?
Yeah, so I think this gets back to what I was saying before about the key reason for it being the incentives on academics to give out higher grades because they want to get more students in their classes. So the root of that is that student numbers are so important for funding allocations to different programs. So if we could just de-emphasize student numbers and funding allocations, that would help a lot. I don't think we should completely do away with student numbers and funding allocations, because I think that has had positive effects. It's brought a sort of greater spirit of service to academia, but I think we need to de-emphasize it a lot. We could also de-emphasize student evaluations in assessments of instructors, of assessments of academics, because another reason why grades inflate is because academics give out higher grades in order to get better student evaluations. And this is something there's a lot of literature on. There's a very strong correlation between what you get in your evaluations and the grades that you give students. And that's all, you know, they've done the studies like this in the States, in the UK, lots of other countries. So that's another thing we could do.
Very funny on this. This report into, and on a different tack, although thematically similar, this report into universities was released just today by Sir Peter Gluckman, who recommended making the university system more elite, more difficult to get into. And I know that many academics have come on this program and talked about the idea that maybe too many people are being encouraged to go to university, and that subconsciously we're sending the message that if you don't go to university, then you've somehow failed. Do you have thoughts on that more broadly?
I think that there should be a good vocational pathway for students for whom, you know, academia isn't their thing. And I think that the better students academically should go to university. I don't think we should judge people for taking the vocational path instead. I think that what Gluckman's suggesting in his report is to allow some universities to have harder entry requirements across the board. I mean, they already do for certain subjects. Like, you're not allowed to take certain first-year classes at Vic if you haven't achieved a certain grade at NCA. But I think he's suggesting they should be able to do that across the board. And that, actually, I would be open to that, because I think that that might then give the universities a little bit more wiggle room in having harsher grading, right? Because they could reform their grading system so that there's less grade inflation. The risk there is that people don't want to go to your university because your grades are lower. But if then Vic could turn around and say, no, actually, we're one of the most selective universities in New Zealand. You know, our grades are tough because our students are good. That might counteract that and allow them to actually do something about the spiraling grade inflation that we've documented.
Yeah, make it part of your branding. That's interesting. Good stuff. Interesting stuff. James Kierstead, really nice chatting to you, James. Thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
That is Dr. James Kierstead, who has written a report on what we were talking about for the New Zealand Initiative, for whom he is a researcher.